We'll look at Esther 8, verse 17.
Be on.
Okay, Esther 8. Many people of the land became Jews.
Yeah. Well, what we discussed this during the break, and what we learned when we discussed this during the break, and if we look at the language, it says, "And many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them." There's two points. It doesn't really specify that it's a time reference. It says, "And many of the Jews." Many of the people of the land became Jews. We've seen in God's Word many different times where God interjects right in the middle of a conversation. He interjects something that's coming from a completely different conversation, an interruption, if you will. And if we look at this language, we see that there is not a specific time reference that is given here. It didn't really say. And then many of the Jews, that would have been a specific. And we've seen God in Esther, we've seen where he is, when he wants to be, he will be extremely specific on that day they call the feast.
I think you have a point. You're basically saying that they could have become Jews.
Well, basically we can read it this way. And oh, by the way,
not at that time.
Right, it's not a time reference. It's not saying it happened at that time. It could be we could read it just as well as say, oh, by the way, many of the people of the land became Jews. And he's telling us why. He says, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them. And how do you become a Jew? Who is the fear of the Jews? It would be God. For the fear of God fell upon them. So it's really not a time reference. So I think
Okay, yeah, I think you have some points there.
Okay, thank you. And it was short.
Lester?
I was wondering if you can turn to 2 Samuel 22:41.
2 Samuel 22.
Verse 41. So maybe that's Italian, you know.
Thou has also given me the necks of mine enemies that I might destroy them that hate me.
Okay, is that a tie-in with chapter 9, verses 1?
Yes. If you look up the word enemy in the Bible,
yeah,
it's throughout. For instance, take a look at Luke chapter 1, when John the Baptist was being born, and then his father Zacharias' mouth was open. Look at what he says in verse 69. In Luke chapter 1, and has raised up a horn of salvation for us in the house of his servant David, as he spake by the mouth of his holy prophets, which have been since the world began, that we should be saved from our enemies and from the hand of all that hate us, to perform the mercy promised to our fathers, and to remember his holy covenant, the oath which he sware to our father Abraham, that he would grant unto us that we, being delivered out of the hand of our enemies, might serve him without fear. So that's in the mouth of all the holy prophets. God's promise has much to do with deliverance from our enemies and the enemies of his kingdom.
Yeah,
and so that's the point of Esther, is this is the day the enemies of the Jews are slain.
This is my last question. If this is called the Feast of Purim, and we get the, all these liberators and stuff, what's the sense of pasturing the liberator or the gospel,
right,
to the people since it's going to be the end, you know?
Well, I know what you're saying. Since everybody's saved,
yeah,
then sharing information isn't going to save anyone. And since the world's been warned about judgment and the trumpet's been blown, sharing the information isn't necessary. And it's for neither of those reasons. Notice again, if you go to Esther chapter 8, here's the reason that we want to share this information. It says in verses 16 and 17 there, well, verse 17, in every province and in every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast, and a good day. So why share it? For the benefit, for the encouragement, and for the blessing of the people of God, for the elect that are out there. That's the reason that God is comforting His people.
Or it could be a follow-up, right?
It is follow-up information, and that is what's comforting about it. And that's what's encouraging about it. It expands the information about May 21.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
All right, thank you. Anyone else?
Yes. Could you please explain?
Can you, so people on Paltalk can hear you?
Sorry. Could you please turn to Revelation? Can you please turn to Revelation 13, 3 and clarify or explain that verse, please?
Revelation 13, 3 says, "And I saw one of his heads,
right,
as it were wounded to death." And I think Mr. Camping's given a good explanation for this, that
okay,
Satan was, he was bound at the cross, and at that point it seemed as if he was slain. And so one of his heads, or one of his rules, periods of rule, if you look at Revelation 17, it says in verse 8, "The beast that thou sawest was," that's referring to Satan's rule prior to the cross, "and is not, because he was defeated at the cross, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit." So three different aspects. And then look at verse 10 of Revelation 17. "There are seven kings," which is referring to his rule throughout time. "Five are fallen in the 11,000 years leading up to the cross. One is throughout the church age, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space," his rule during a little season. So God breaks up his rule, and that's what he's doing in Revelation 13. Mm-hmm. "He was wounded to death at the cross. His deadly wound was healed when he's loosed, and all the world wondered after the beast."
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, anyone else have a verse or question or comment you'd like to make? Okay. One last one, Franz.
Can you read Luke 7, verse 19, please?
Luke 7?
Yes.
And verse 19. "And John, calling unto him two of his disciples, sent them to Jesus, saying, Art thou he that should come, or look we for another?"
Yes. I believe this verse is giving us some encouragement, what our mind frame should be, in some kind of guidance as well. Like, we should keep on, you know, looking, never giving up, no matter what the situation, you know.
Because John's in prison, as mm-hmm. Reuben was just talking about. And why was he in prison? For the gospel's sake, because
yes,
he was faithful. And there he was facing some difficulties. And so did he know that Jesus was the Messiah? Of course he did. Mm-hmm. From early on, he would have been told that. But what he was really asking for was some reassurance. "I know these things, but tell me again."
Okay.
And so he makes that statement, "Art thou the one that should come, or look we for another?" And sometimes we're in the same kind of position with God. We know he's true, faithful, and almighty, and we know all these things are so, but we want God to assure us one more time.
Okay.
And that's what John the Baptist is doing in a difficult situation of being in prison. But I think you're looking at it as he's continuing to seek for the Lord.
Well, it's more like in this difficult time that we're in, a lot of people seem to give up, especially after May 21 and, you know, the times are being set. But it seems like this verse is telling us we may not understand, you know, we may not always understand what God is saying, but we should always keep on looking to the Bible, because maybe God has more to say, you know, to especially in this time that we're living in.
Well,
because we're very
he's definitely looking for reassurance from Christ, who is the Word. So that could apply in that sense.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Reuben?
I think John was looking for to see if his work is done or not. So when Jesus sends back information, you know, the gospel speaks to the end. And I think he was rejoicing because he has fulfilled his, even though he was in prison. He wanted to know if his job finished.
Yeah, well, I think that it's the situation where he is in prison and then he sends his embassage to Jesus, and Jesus tell them what you're seeing, that the blind see and the deaf hear and the lame walk and the dead are raised and the gospel is preached to the poor. And they come back and they share that information, which of course testifies that he is the one which John knew all along. And it just reinforces that truth. Yeah, Guy.
The spoil. When the king put out the new decree, it says in three different verses that they were to take the spoil. But then when the end came, they didn't. Now, there were times when the Israelites went into a battle that God commanded them not to take a spoil.
Right.
When they came out of Egypt, he commanded them to spoil the Egyptians. Could the spoil represent those coming to salvation as Satan's house is being plundered? Could that work in there some way? But then at the very end...
Sometimes with what you're referring to, taking the spoil, it's gold and silver, and that could relate to believers.
Yeah.
It's the end of the world and that's being pictured. And it doesn't use the words gold or silver or precious stones or anything like
that.
Right,
just says spoil and bread.
It just says spoil, and then it indicates they laid not their hands on the spoil.
Yeah.
So... on one hand, God grants permission. On the other hand, they didn't do it. And so I think it has to be that distinction that we inherit this world, we inherit the new heaven and new earth over all the other people of the world. And yet we don't touch anything from this world. It's, you know, we leave it all behind.
Okay.
But thank you. Okay. Yeah, I'll see. All right.
Can you read Revelation 10, please?
Revelation 10,
verse 4. And I'm interested in the
I don't understand it.
Of when
yeah, the seven thunders.
Not necessarily seven thunder. When it says seal up. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Do not write it down. What was that?
I don't understand that verse. I do know that. There's a couple of verses in here that people have tried to go to and use, but I don't think they understand the chapter either. And I think it's better to just admit it and say, I'm not sure exactly what God's saying, than to jump to conclusions about other verses when we don't understand the context.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. All right, we'll stop here. And Lord willing, tonight at 10 p.m., on Skype and Pal Talk, we'll continue with question and answer.
Not a question.
Not a question? Okay.
Well.
I've seen you here every week too. No, really. She told me a few months ago, I'm going to be here every Sunday, and she was.
The way you say the course, you encouraged at one point we were certain what was going to happen, how we were going to replenish. We were so depleted after May 21 and after October 21. We're at an odd time low, or power or strength was gone. But God kept you here for us.
And I'm not expecting to see you again. And we have certain hopes on all of you. But I just want to say thank you, because I know that the Lord comes, I will forget. I never remember.
Yeah, I know. I know. I mean, it's funny how people say, "Oh, it's all pride, all this date settings, pride, and glory. You're seeking glory." Well, if Christ comes as we expect, then we remember nothing. And if He doesn't come, well, you know what we're going to get. So I don't know where all the pride and glory is. I mean, it's like zero. Right. Let's hope it ends up that way.
Maria, for her patience, for allowing you to be here Sunday on the Sunday, for the study, time, and effort that you put into doing everything. You have no idea the impact that you have had on us. And I'm not just speaking for myself.
Amen.
I'm speaking for all.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Noah. I appreciate it. Thank you. It's time to go home.
To heaven.